Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. Jazza, should Boris Johnson resign?
Yes. Thank you for listening to the Right Dishonourable podcast. Lovely as always. Make sure you smash that subscribe, follow button, or whatever it is. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Given how long it's taken us to record this one since the last episode, you'd have thought it would have taken less time.
In my defence, I've been really sick.
Yeah, super sick.
Yeah, which, it's not COVID. At least it would be really weird if it was COVID, because I've taken, several tests every day, and they've all come back negative. So it was just a cold, and I was being a baby.
That sounds about
but
right.
fuck you. But it lasted forever. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, where we talk about current events, social issues, and politics.
Jazza's cold.
And my cold.
Oh, sorry, politics.
Yeah, and politics.
Sorry. That is what we talk about.
I'm Jazza, this is Jimmy. He's fine.
Yeah, I'm fine. Fully all over the details of this week's news, which is largely about Boris Johnson being a bit of a shit, really, I think it's fair to say. That seems to be the common theme this week, wouldn't you
Even
say?
Even though he is... It's well documented that he's a bad person. It is quite interesting how it's all convened quite conveniently on this week's events. So we have...
A number of people have pointed out that the government had designated this crime week, apparently.
And, the irony.
Not because of their own crimes that they're committing, I should add, but
alleged crimes.
I mean, I'm not sure any of them qualify as crimes, but they're certainly misdeeds.
I don't know. I feel like the drug use in Parliament is certainly, that crime is happening there.
I didn't realise there was any drug use in
Parliament. Oh my God, do you not know this? Okay, well, scratch all of the agenda that we have, because they swabbed 12 toilet basins across Parliament, many of which are only able to be used by members of Parliament, and 11 of the 12 came back positive for cocaine.
Isn't it the case that you can swab almost any toilet in London or toilet based
but
in London?
But ones that are only...
There'll be some traces of cocaine.
Yeah, but that's because lots of people use them. Only high security clearance people would have been able to use these toilets.
I mean, but we know that Tory MPs all use cocaine because they were all bragging about it last time there was a leadership election.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not really news, Jazza, is it? You should have priced it in.
Exactly. Speaking of pricing things in, Boris Johnson's career, you think he should resign, but presumably you don't think he will, I'm guessing.
I think the current events maybe will probably look back and see that this was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back and ultimately have led to his resignation. But I don't think we're going to see that for a while, because I think the Conservative Party needs to figure out who the fuck did they put there? I don't know.
Isn't that really the main job of the Tory party, deciding who will be the next prime minister?
I mean, where is the lie? Okay.
So, I mean, this is going to be a slightly rambling podcast, I think, with no clear delineations between segments.
No clear delineations, but there are some things that we are going to talk about, and these are ongoing stories, so who knows, by the time that this is actually in your ears, Boris Johnson may no longer be the Prime Minister, so who the fuck knows. But broadly, there's been a big brouhaha around I'm not going to say alleged anymore, because we know it happened. Specifically one party that happened on the 18th of December last year, when London was in tier 3 restrictions, but there were that was a gathering of 20 to 30 people. Gathering, it was a party. They had look at me spouting the propaganda of the Conservative Party and the government. My God, what a shill.
A gathering is a type of party.
Correct. Yeah. Not all gatherings are parties, but all parties are gatherings. There was a Secret Santa. There were prizes given. There was a Christmas quiz. All very festive. But oh, whoops, we weren't allowed to do that, and they'd told us that we weren't allowed to do that. And lots of people are pissed off, especially those who had to leave lonely family members alone over Christmas because of the restrictions last year. Quite wonderfully waltzing into the stereotype that has been given them of a rule for them and not for others, especially when we consider previous misdemeanors by the likes of Matt Hancock, Dominic Cummings, who obviously did the most elaborate eye test on the face of the planet in the middle of lockdown last year. This is not a very good look for the government. Not only that, but there are some other alleged parties or gatherings that happened in the run-up to Christmas last year. Some leaving dues, some Christmas dues. One in the Department of Education, this is from the BBC, on the 10th of December. And one other one, I believe, at Downing Street on the 27th of November. Boris Johnson claims he had no idea that it happened, that he was angry when he saw members of his press staff joking about it, my goodness, because he had no idea that the party happened in his own fucking house.
I mean, you know, I can sympathise. I'm sure I would not necessarily be invited to a party in my own house, so it can happen.
Wow, are you okay?
I'm just saying, you know, if you're you're living with a lot of people, as Boris Johnson is, or his many children, and, you know, somebody organises something and you're not necessarily looped in. You know.
How many children do you think Boris Johnson has now? Quickly.
At least 7 is the official line.
Yeah, I believe it's now 9. I believe it's now at least 9, isn't it?
At least 9.
Yeah, I think.
Okay, so I mean, this is another story that's come up, some of the responses to this news have been, I think, a tad hysterical, you know, notwithstanding Boris Johnson's general low character. He and his wife Carrie Johnson have announced the birth of their second child.
Yeah, and we're not going to talk about it at all because nobody fucking cares. The next thing that we want to address
you just rode over my joke.
Sorry,
I was prepping myself.
I'm so sorry.
That was a pause for dramatic effect.
It was, and I jumped in. I'm so sorry. Please go ahead. No, I'll laugh. I promise I will.
I feel like, you know, we've ruined it now. So
No, tell your joke. I won't say anything until you do it.
Well, I was enjoying this Guardian headline about the news of the second child for the Johnsons, which is the, as it says here in the Guardian, a second child for the couple and at least the 7th for the Prime Minister.
good job, Guardian. That was quite funny. As well as this debacle about Christmas parties, fucking hell, I hate that we've been talking about Christmas parties, especially when, like, actual shit is happening. It has come to our attention after an inquiry that Boris Johnson was not particularly honest when talking to the those who put together the inquiry about how he funded the refurbing of the flat. The Electoral Commission has gone away, crunched some numbers, looked at some WhatsApp messages, and found out that Boris Johnson actually actively asked his mate Lord Brownlow to foot the bill for paying the contractors to do up the flat, because Theresa May left it like a John Lewis hellscape or something. Is that what Carrie Johnson said?
I do remember that being, well, that was the reported line. I don't know if it was ever properly attributed to Carrie Johnson.
I mean, I still maintain John Lewis is lovely. Please sponsor the podcast.
You're from Essex, so your standards are not quite as high.
You are a snob, sir.
It's been a while since I've had a dig at Essex, so you've got to take the opportunities when
it's
they come.
Okay, we'll take it lying down. And so overall, well, Boris Johnson did pay Lord Brownlow back a total of £112,549.12. But
you'd have thought he'd have rounded it up to a neat 550.
One would have. But
that is a bit tight.
But the problem
it?
Was that the refurb was paid via cabinet officer and the Conservative Party, and so counted as a donation, which is awkward and not how stuff is meant to work.
Yeah, it's bad. Bad.
Also, we're now in Plan B. No, not the morning after pill. But although similarities, the horse has bolted, hasn't it? We're now being affronted with the Omicron variant of COVID-19, and cases are increasing exponentially. And so now we have moved to new restrictions in England. Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland have their own restrictions. But in England, we're now being encouraged to work from home and have to wear masks in places, unless we're eating.
Yeah, or singing.
Or singing. So. Yeah, I always do. Just stop singing. Like, who are these people who just need to sing? Theatre kids.
People who play in alternative rock bands, for instance.
Oh. Hi, Jimmy. How's that?
It's going great, thanks.
Any gigs coming up for?
Yeah, yeah, just the
okay,
one.
Okay, good.
I feel like this intro has rambled on for quite long enough, so let's play a bit of music, talk about the Patreon account, and then bitch about Boris Johnson for another 50 minutes.
I'm genuinely really looking forward to it. Hello, dear friend. It is Jazza here. Just to remind you that in order to keep this podcast going, we rely on backing from patrons on Patreon, just like you. Without them, we would be really out of pocket in terms of web hosting fees and the buying of equipment and updating of equipment. And if you too choose to chuck a couple of dollars our way for each episode, we'd really appreciate it, because it does make a huge difference. Big thanks to our currently existing patrons, Nick, Jer, Alexander, David, Aturna, Andrew, Michael, Matt and Gemma. Okay, let's get back to, just staring into the horrific void that is however many more months of Johnson's premiership that we have in. That's fun.
Jazza, let's start with another resignation question. Should Allegra Stratton, the former spokesperson for the Prime Minister, have resigned in the wake of this scandal about the Christmas party that allegedly happened last year?
It happened. I find hers quite interesting, and I found the rabbit hole of Allegra Stratton quite interesting. So she, by trade, is a journalist, was a producer and a journalist for the BBC, ITV, The Guardian, before coming in to work at Number 10. She apparently was tipped for this job, a press spokesperson, which was a job that was made up by Dominic Cummings because he loved the idea of going toe-to-toe with the press every single day. They were going to do daily press briefings, spent 2 point something million on this new press room, which is the blue thing with the Union Jacks that you see Boris Johnson standing in front of nowadays rather than the wood-panelled walls.
Yeah, so it's somewhere in Downing Street, and I think Dominic Cummings wanted the equivalent to the US briefings that go on in Washington DC with
Considering it's in 10 Downing Street, it's surprising that Boris Johnson knows it exists.
I think it might be in 12 Downing Street, actually. It's very far for him to go to.
Apologies, we continue to feed into fake news. So she was, lots of people kind of auditioned for this job because they would have had to have fielded questions from the press every single day about the goings on of the government. Apparently she was absolutely appalling at it, as we have seen from the video that leaked from December last year when they were doing these rehearsals, and she was posed the question of whether or not there was a Downing Street party that actually did happen, and then they joked about it. She had no idea how to answer it, and it's probably a very good representation of why they kept on pushing back the launch of the daily press briefings and then completely scrapped them, and then Allegra Stratton went off to do something at COP.
Yeah, she was the official spokesperson for COP26 for a while.
That ended a while ago.
Yeah, I mean,
nobody really knows what she's done since then, but she's still on a salary of like £120,000 or something like that. So that's nice.
Well, up until the other day, she was on that salary. I mean, I don't know that the video does on its own suggest that she'd have made a bad press secretary or spokesperson, because, you know, basically this video that was leaked to ITV and, you know, caused all this trouble in the last couple of days, it seemed to be them just like fooling around. So I'm sure that, you know, she fielded quite a lot of questions in those mock briefings and, you know, probably answered most of them fine, I would guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you said, you know, do we know that a lot of people interviewed for this role of press spokesperson?
Yeah, there was, I can't remember names, but there were people from like the BBC and stuff like that. But apparently the reason that she, that Allegra Stratton got this job is because, allegedly the reason that she got this job is because her husband, who works at The Spectator, is best mates with Rishi Sunak and was best man at his wedding, and it just really cemented the fact that, oh my god, they all fucking know each other.
Yeah, you're talking about James Forsyth.
Yes.
Yeah. Who?
Lovely, lovely man.
He wrote an amazing column for The Times today, where he was describing the difficulties that Boris Johnson's having in his parliamentary party, and then just mentioned Allegra Stratton, and then in brackets just put my wife. I don't really see that you can be a chief political commentator for any newspaper, you know, the time, I mean, you know, whether you work as the political editor for The Spectator or as a columnist for The Times, I don't really see that you can comment on the affairs of state when you're literally sleeping in bed with somebody who knows everything, you know, most of what's going on behind the scenes.
Jimmy Nichols, you do not know their sleeping arrangements.
Okay, maybe they have separate beds. That is true.
She did a very, like, I think it was less than 24 hours after that video leaked, she did a very tearful resignation outside of her flat. Now, I believe her when she said that she's going to have to live with those images and what she said and the way that she, and the tone with which she tackled that question, and that being viewed by so many people, she's going to have to deal with that for the rest of her days. Like, that's like, people have interpreted that, and I think understandably and quite rightly have interpreted that as number 10 kind of like, and the powers that be in the government laughing at the fact that they were breaking the rules so flagrantly.
She didn't go
to the party, but it is kind of like a, oh my god, I can't believe that we're like breaking the rules, that we literally just told people that they have to spend their Christmases alone, or we're about to tell people that they're gonna spend their Christmases alone, and then like I can sympathize for her for that, and she's clearly really distraught about the fact that that has been leaked. Good.
You're happy that she's distraught?
Yeah, she should be.
I do remember reading somebody, I can't
remember. Although I will say, I find it very ironic, and I'm not the first person to say this, I find it very ironic that the person who didn't go to the party has lost their job.
Well, yeah, there is that aspect of it, which we should probably discuss, but there was somebody on Twitter who was saying, you know, I can't believe that our political, or she was bemoaning the fact that our political culture allows people to get this upset about something. But if you've done something wrong and then you're found out and, you know, you face public condemnation for that, I think it's okay for you to be upset. So I don't think that it says anything wrong about the political culture or anything. I mean, it's kind of like when you You know, you see occasionally criminals will be convicted of something and they'll break, you know, they'll start crying in court. And I don't think that says anything about the court. You know, that's, you know, often people do regret bad things they've done, but it is, I don't think that means anything for the wider culture.
Yeah, I don't think it does either.
But
look at us, echo chamber.
I'm sure I'll be able to contrive some sort of disagreement in the next few minutes. So she's resigned. There's been calls for the guy who asked the question to her about the Christmas party. This guy called Ed Oldfield, whose dad I think is a Tory donor and who's I'm sure I read that.
I mean, I didn't see that coming.
And this guy's, he's a special advisor and he's 23 years old. That's about all I know of him. Oh, he went to school in Kent.
He's 23 years old. Oh, I hate him.
I mean, I know special advisors are kind of lackeys, you know, rather than necessarily people who are actually advised. But there's a bit of me that thinks, what the fuck is a 23-year-old ever going to tell, like, a government minister, like, about anything? Like, it's not that you can draw on a well of experience about anything, but, you know, sidebar, I think.
There's also calls for that have recently come out for Jack Doyle, who's the Deputy Communications Officer, Deputy Communications Director for Number 10, who apparently was giving out... who isn't linked to the video, I don't think, but is apparently giving out the prizes at the Christmas party for the quiz. So,
do we know what the prizes were?
That is a detail, Laura Koonsberg, I would love to know. I want to know who got what in the Secret Santa. I want to know what the quiz, what the pub quiz segments were. Was there a creative one where you like have to come up with a poem or draw a picture? These are the details that I need to know.
I would say so. I mean, I imagine there's a lot of Oxbridge graduates in Downing Street. They're probably pretty good at pub quizzes.
You know, what?
General knowledge.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I mean, somebody really needs to check that.
Yeah. You know, in the civil service more widely, they've got a lot of general knowledge. So I'd imagine it'd be quite a competitive pub quiz. We probably should be taking this slightly more seriously, shouldn't we?
I'm happy with this tone. This is how I feel about it. I'm pretty sure I said this before, but they're just bad people. I think it's radicalizing me, I'll be honest, Jimmy, and that I find really, really irritating.
So, do you find this story more or less aggravating than the Dominic Cummings Bernard Castle story that you referred to earlier, which was from last summer, or the summer of 2020?
Why does everything have to be a competition and a rank with you, Jimmy? equal amounts, I think. I think that this is indicative of the way that those who were setting in the rules regarded those rules and thought that they didn't really have to worry about them. That's what I get from it, that this is something that everybody else should do and we shouldn't have to do it. I was about to say, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. The tone taken by the staff that you have who are working in literally the building that you live in, that is dictated by the attitudes of the person at the top. And clearly Boris Johnson did not care enough to make sure that people were not doing these kinds of ridiculous, stupid shenanigans. He should not be in charge of this fucking country. And I don't care if he is, if he's resigned or toppled or swallowed by a fucking Tyrannosaurus Rex. Like, I don't know, I don't particularly care how he stops being the Prime Minister, but he needs to not be the Prime Minister anymore.
I mean, presumably...
Farron in charge before I put, like, for anything. Like, literally, it's...
I mean, Tim Farron's quite a nice guy.
Yeah, no, that's unfair.
I'm sure he'd be fine.
He's fine, yeah.
But Boris Johnson's not going to resign in disgrace, is he? So the only options I see is that he loses a general
election.
Get the
T-Rex.
Loses a general election or is forced out by his party, basically.
Yeah. We'll come to I think the latter of those things is inevitably going to happen now before there's another election.
There's a big prediction from Jazza there.
I have another big prediction as well. I think I know how it's going to go down. But
Okay, so save that maybe to towards I'll the
end that,
of the podcast.
I'll save that, and there's a little bit of a teaser for you, listener. We were then, the day that Allegra Stratton resigned, we were then given, I think, the most ballsy dead cat ever lobbed into the media landscape, which was a restriction on our liberties.
Are you being ironic with this use of the phrase dead cat?
Not at all.
You think these restrictions were implemented purely to distract us from the story around the Christmas party?
I was listening to Stephen Bush, which I do because he makes me feel something. Like, sometimes I hate him, sometimes I love him, but you know what? At least he makes me feel something. I was listening to Stephen Bush, and I think it was him who said that... Or it was somebody on the New Statesman podcast, I don't want to incorrectly attribute, but someone was saying that it's really clear that it was announced when it was announced. The new restrictions were announced when they were announced early, because the vaccine passport technology and ability to do the vaccine passport stuff that needs to happen now that they announced isn't ready yet. And wasn't planned to be ready for another week. And so that to me is just like, oh, let's bring that forward.
I mean, lack of coordination in Boris Johnson's government, I'm not really sure that's indicative of anything, other than the character of the man. I feel like this, so the dead cat idea, which I feel we should explain slightly earlier, but it's this idea which...
I'll get the Wikipedia page.
I think it originates from... what's that guy's name, the Australian guy who advises that, who's been advising the Tories on elections for probably more than a decade now, is his name Lyndon Crosby. So I think he originated this idea, and actually I saw somebody tweet that Boris Johnson might have written about it previously in his guise as a journalist. It's this idea that if something, if a conversation's happening in politics that you is disadvantageous to you, you should throw something ideally sort of disgusting or outrageous onto the table in order to distract from it. I mean, that in itself is one reason the Plan B thing is not a dead cat by the original definition, although it might count as a distraction of sorts. But I think that... I think the idea is one of those things that people say to sound smart in these kind of scenarios. I just think it's wrong most of the time.
Jimmy, I'm right here.
Not just you, just, other people in general.
Oh, yeah, so it's not just me that you're insulting.
Well, for instance, some people have alleged that the news about... Boris and Carrie Johnson's second child was announced also as a dead cat strategy.
No, Carrie Johnson literally did just birth a child.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Like,
the reason that I think that the restrictions are a dead cat is because I think they deliberately brought them forward for that day so that we'd start talking about that. Like, in that way, I think that it was manufactured in order to draw attention away from the issue that we were talking about, which was fucking Christmas parties.
Well, as many people have pointed out, and I'm gonna quote the academic Rob Ford on this because he's the main person I saw talking about this. If you're having a bad press day because everyone's talking about how you broke your own COVID restrictions, then introducing COVID restrictions is not exactly changing the conversation. If anything, it is only amplifying the hypocrisy of your actions. I don't think this story, this accusation of dead cats, makes any sense whatsoever. I just think it's nonsense on the face of it. And I mean, also, people constantly criticising Boris Johnson for not implementing restrictions early enough, and then also criticising him for implementing them earlier than planned.
It's not criticising him. It's simply observing his behaviour.
I'm sure.
At least that's what I'm doing anyway.
What are these COVID restrictions, this Plan B that's been implemented?
Hold on.
So one of them is that people are going to be encouraged to work from home if they can from Monday the 13th of December. Jazzy, you're working from home most of the time anyway, aren't you? I guess we're in the same boat there.
In real things, it doesn't really affect very much for me. It will affect some people. But it's the whole thing of if you can, it's going to depend on what your boss says.
Yes, isn't it? Yeah, I would say so.
Like, famously, estate agents still had to work all the way through the first lockdown, was it? Because their work was deemed as... I'm sorry. Any estate agents listening, I'm so sorry. But it was like, it was they were deemed as essential for being in the office. I don't really understand what the thing is, but I remember seeing that there's a couple of estate agents just around the corner from me, and they were there, like, packed into their offices. Absolutely fucking ridiculous. But it'll depend boss to boss. If your boss wants to keep you in the office, then you'll probably have to keep on going in. If they don't, then you probably won't.
Yeah, that probably is true, I would say. The estate agent thing is weird. I guess it maybe makes sense, since they have to go and, you know, they have to go and do the only part of their job which is vaguely useful, which is hand you a key so that you can actually go into the flat you want to look at.
May I introduce you to a brand new piece of technology called post?
Well, I guess you'd have to post the keys back, so that could lead to all sorts of problem. I'm sure they could come up with some sort of key card system, or maybe that'd be too much plastic waste. Who knows?
Let's not try and revolutionise the estate agent business, shall we? as well as guidance to work from home, which is, I mean, it's so fluffy and was already in place in Scotland, for example. We're now legally mandated to wear face masks in most public indoor venues, including theatres and cinemas. Except where it's not practical, including eating, drinking, exercising, or singing.
I told you that was singing.
Yeah, the singing is very odd. Also on public transport as well. And so it was a great joy to me today, as I was getting on the train from King's Cross to Stratford International, for me to see about a third of the people on the train not wearing their masks. Really,
I think compliance has gone up somewhat since.
It was usually no one.
Yeah, but for a long time for several months, I think, in London, it's been mandated on TfL services that you wear face masks.
Yeah, and there hasn't been any compliance to it whatsoever, of it.
I've been complying, Jazza. Among millions.
Yeah, but such great citizens as yourself are few and far between.
I'm sure. I mean, I think it was maybe 50% at the height of compliance, I would say, when it wasn't, well, you know, when it was London mayoral policy rather than UK government policy. But it has,
I just want to go up to every single person and be like, where are you fucking mask? Have I ever done it? No.
That's good, Jazza, because that would be mildly psychotic. If you did it to every person, you'd be guaranteed to be shouting at somebody who is medically exempt from wearing a mask, which wouldn't be the best look, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair.
But, I mean, people have been taking the piss around masks since the start of the pandemic, so...
We're also going to have to use COVID passes for unseated indoor venues like nightclubs, for example, and any outdoor venues with more than 4,000 people, and any venue with over 10,000 people. So I look forward to seeing everybody in football stadiums wearing their masks.
Yeah, that's just not going to happen, is it?
Nope. And then daily testing for people identified as contact with a coronavirus case, rather than isolation, only isolation with people who test positive. All of these seem sensible. Why weren't we doing this already? To be fair, I was already doing all of this.
Yeah, I mean, apart from the COVID passes thing, which...
I'd just whip mine out.
Yeah, you just show it to the doorman. He's like, I don't care. I don't care. Yeah. Just go in. I mean, the COVID passes thing has depended. I've been to some gigs where they've asked for one, and then some gigs where they don't care. So, and I think enforcement of a lot of this stuff is going to vary depending on how inclined the venue owners are. It doesn't seem like these restrictions will have some impact, I think, on the spread of the virus, but they're not particularly radical, are they? It's a very mild increase on restrictions.
Apparently, the work from home, it's not a mandate, but encouraging people to work from home is one of the biggest things, because it takes people out of public transport, it takes people out of stuff like rush hour and mixing in things. Apparently, that's like the biggest one. I've heard it from a lot of Sage adjacent.
Sage adjacent.
People, yeah, people who are in Sage but always like come on the Today program and say, I'm speaking in a personal capacity. And then go, this is all go, everything's on fire, please stop everything. But yeah, like, I think that's a pretty big thing. I the mask stuff, people have decided it's a personal choice now, haven't they?
I've read various things about how effective mask wearing actually is. It seems intuitive that it would make some difference, and I don't really see what the big deal is in wearing one personally. But
some people are big babies.
Some people really hate it. Really deeply offended by mask wearing, which I don't, mm-hmm. I don't really get. I've more sympathy with people who, you know, are a bit wary about the vaccine. Although I think that is ultimately irrational as well. But I can see why people are wary of that than just putting a bit of cloth over their faces.
What's interesting about these restrictions is that there's a huge amount of pushback from backbench conservative MPs, and it's likely that when this goes through and becomes law, the prime minister is going to need, or the government are going to need, backing from Labour in order to pass this. How's that significant, if at all?
Well, that means Steve Baker could have something to occupy his time, I guess. Not heard from him for a while. That's Steve Baker, who was leading rabble rouser during the Brexit years in Parliament under Theresa May.
And it's nice to give him something to do, isn't it? I guess
I would say so. Yeah. There's been this strong contingent in the Tory party that has been pretty sceptical of lockdown restrictions and pandemic measures in general. And I guess because there is this slight groundswell of anti-Boris Johnson feeling within the party, that will be combined with the existing lockdown sceptics, and it all kind of adds up to more trouble for Boris Johnson. But as you say, it's not going to stop him passing the measures, because Labour is pretty mm-hmm. pro-restrictions in general. So
Wes Streeting was on the Today programme on Friday morning. And was asked by Nick Robinson, why are you backing the government? You'd probably be able to actually take down Boris Johnson, to be honest, if you got if he failed to pass that legislation. I think he came across quite well. He's like a rising star of the Labour Party. And
What was his answer to that question?
We're not backing Boris Johnson, we're backing the scientific experts and the advisors and stuff like that. We're backing the science.
It's sometimes slightly difficult to square a nuanced position with the public, but you could vote against it and say these measures are not strong enough, we need stronger measures, and that's why we're voting down these measures. But
we need them in, don't
well,
we?
Well, that, that's
we need something,
that,
if
that,
anything.
That is what they would say. I mean, so this is I guess the broader question is that do we actually need these measures?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Because we don't know enough about the new variant yet.
So is this going to be? I get, you know, this is a question that a lot of people
and
have asked.
and early data is worrying, which is why it's a variant of concern.
Right. Yeah. But there are going to be more variants of concern, presumably after Omicron. Is this going to be a process that we are just going to continually go through for the next few years, where a new variant of concern emerges? We introduce some more restrictions until we can sound out what's going on with this particular variant, and then we just go back and forth on it. Is there a long-term game plan for this, do you think?
Do you want to hear something really depressing?
Go on.
So a friend of mine was apparently looking into the Spanish flu, which was the last kind of like big global pandemic.
So this was just after World War One, wasn't it?
I believe it was the about early 20th century.
Right. Okay.
let's just say that it was after Queen Victoria at the very earliest. Apparently it was like a 10-year process of it coming back, killing a load of people, and like gradually becoming less and less virulent. So my answer to your question is, I think so, yeah. I think this is just what it's going to be like for a while.
So the,
we're just going to need boosters and stuff like that.
So we're just going to have to go through phases of revaccinating the population, you know, undoing restrictions, reimposing restrictions.
Yeah, I think masks are probably going to be normal in wintertime at the very least. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the long-term game plan, is to kind of keep you know, putting in what protections we can and then just waiting it out.
Well, I'd love to wave a magic wand, Jimmy, but I lost mine.
I mean, I'm asking this because there's a school of thought among the more lockdown
to let it crowd. To let it blast, like herd immunity, let it blast through the population.
Effectively, yeah, that is what they say, and they argue that you know, the cost of the restrictions, which are economic, social, various other things, they say that they have a different assessment of the trade-offs. They think that it's not really worthwhile, and that we should just go back to living our lives. And thank God
we will never know. The reason that I'm not okay with it, but it's something that we have to deal with, is because it is our healthcare systems that can't handle the virality of this virus. It passed, even when it was in its original state as the Wuhan, it's not the Wuhan variant, it's the original variant.
The Alpha variant, presumably. Or
no, Alpha was Kent.
Oh, okay. Pre-Alpha.
Yeah, pre-alpha. Oh my god, I've been into coronavirus since pre-alpha. It's so much better than their third album, Delta. What was I saying?
Such an effective joke. Before you started riffing on hipster variants. Yeah.
It really brings healthcare systems to their knees, because we just don't have the capacity to be able to process that many people who are sick or dying. And that's why we stop it. Not just to kind of like, you know, stop people getting poorly. Like, there are real serious consequences that go beyond just people dying from COVID.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty compelling.
Thanks.
But yeah, that's you know, the 20s. It's really got off to a great start, and it sounds as though it's going to be a great decade.
Roaring 20s.
Roaring 20s.
Can't wait for Trump to come back. if you were Labour, would you be backing the government, or would you be playing politics?
I mean, okay, so say hypothetically they vote down the measures, and Boris Johnson can't muster enough parliamentary support in his own party to get the measures through. Yeah, sure, it's a bit embarrassing for Boris Johnson, but I don't think it's particularly existential for him. Like, you know, it makes him look like an idiot that he can't actually get these measures through.
Too late.
But yeah, I don't see that it is. I don't think it's tactically a good thing for Labour. I think it makes just as much, you know, more sense for them to say, okay, we'll vote these measures through because we think the measures are important, and it signals that they're still taking the pandemic seriously, arguably more seriously than the government. I think that's probably better for them, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
So I think their instincts are right on this one. And if you ever look at the polls that have come through, there's been one that I saw today that put Labour at 40% and the Tories at 33% in terms of voting intention.
There was a YouGov one which also had Labour about 6 or 7 points ahead as well.
So, I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting because whenever that Hartlepool by-election was, everyone had a pretty grim prognosis for Labour and Keir Starmer. And actually things, you know, politically speaking and electorally speaking, things are very much looking out for him, aren't they?
Sure, but the next election is not going to be until 2024. And that's ages away.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it could be a bit earlier, because the government have snatched back the power to call a snap election. But, you know, presumably if the polls are not looking in their favour, they will wait
they have no reason to. This is going to be like John Major all over again. He's going to be waddling around an unpopular like floppy-haired sod.
You're talking about Boris Johnson now rather than Keir Starmer.
I am, yeah. So
you said earlier that you think that Boris Johnson is not going to fight the next general election, so I think you elaborate on that a little bit.
No, they'll get... So, heard from our Laura Kunzberg that she's spoken with... talking about Laura Kunzberg as if she's our correspondent. the Right Dishonourable Parliamentary Correspondent, Laura Kunzberg, no, also...
We cannot afford that salary.
Moonlighting as the BBC political correspondent. She said that she's had loads of conversations with Conservative MPs and... grandees of the party who are like, who have decided they're going to get rid of him now. He's beyond the pale. He's unsalvageable. They can't work with him anymore. So that decision has been made. They've reached that point. And so now they're deciding who they can replace him with. But the thing is, that bit takes a really long time sometimes. So it's not like he's going to go anytime soon, but I reckon he will go. I don't think that you can come back from this.
See, I just... there have been similar stories about this for most of his premiership. And I think, you know...
He's only been doing it for 2 years.
Yes, that is true. That's about 2 years and 5 months, I think. But... You know, as soon as a prime—I mean, even before—but as soon as a prime minister gets voted into office, there is somebody somewhere who's plotting to replace him. Because mm-hmm. you know, there's always people that don't like the incumbent prime minister or leader of the opposition or what have you. So if you're a reasonably astute political reporter, I think you can always contact somebody who is opposed to the prime minister being in that office at that time. I mean, this isn't really a defence of Boris Johnson's character. I just think that I'm a little bit suspicious of the noise from what will ultimately prove an ephemeral story in the case of the Christmas party thing. You know,
I don't think so. I think the Christmas party thing is a Dominic Cummings level event.
I mean, it is, but like,
and people still talk about that.
People do still talk about that, and I think it does. You know, Boris Johnson's government obviously does have a reputation for being pretty lax about rules, and being a little bit, you know, being haphazard, not being particularly organised, and all the rest of it. And I think it, you know, that reputation is staying with them. But you know, ultimately, the Tories did, you know, did move past the Dominic Cummings thing. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't. There are I guarantee you, if you go back and read press reports around that time, there will be stirrings of people saying, oh, you know, this is the end of Boris Johnson. He's going to there's going to be a revolt among his backbench MPs and he's going to be ousted. I mean, ultimately, I think that, as you know, as I said, there's only two, you know, unless he dies abruptly, there's only two ways that Boris Johnson leaves this job, I think, and it's loses a general election or is ousted by his party before a general mm-hmm. election. And I think that mostly sitting prime ministers do fight the next general election.
Mostly, yeah. But the Tories boot out, or at least try to boot out, their unpopular leaders. Labour don't. Labour tend not to. I don't think they ever have.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that is, I think that's true. I've never really looked into the numbers, but that is a common assumption. So I mean, I think it's more likely that they, just because of the reputation, that they'll get rid of Johnson than say if the parties were reversed, they would get rid mm-hmm. of say, you know, a Prime Minister Ed Miliband or something like that.
Oh, don't tease me with that.
But I mean, as you say, the other problem is who to replace him with, and I don't, at this stage, I really don't think that's obvious.
There's one person who's been really quiet, Jimmy. Can you think who?
Is it Rishi Sunak?
Nope.
Michael Gove?
Mm-hmm.
this is Michael Gove is almost as unpopular as Boris Johnson. Do you know what I mean?
But I think he's the only person who would be willing to do it. I think he's the only person who would be willing to stand against him if there was a vote of no confidence.
I mean, presumably, if there's a vote of no confidence and Boris Johnson loses, do you think he'd run again as, like, for another leadership election? Do you think he'd be that undignified?
Boris Johnson? No.
No. So actually, I mean, it doesn't matter who runs against, quote unquote, Boris Johnson, because if there's a vote of no confidence and he loses it, then there'll be another leadership election.
Yeah, fair enough. And he can be like, I won't seek support in the ballot. Yeah, that's fair. But at this point, the 1922 committee becomes, oh my God, they're a load of fucking nutters. But basically, they're a load of backbench Tory MPs who are basically, the chair of the 1922 committee is the holder of the letters.
Yeah.
And if they get enough letters from conservative members of parliament that say, I want to kick the head honcho out, then it triggers a leadership election.
So that's 55 letters that need to be sent at the moment.
I believe actually it's, it's 55.
it's 50% of the Tory parliament.
It's 54.6%.
Okay. Maths.
Yeah. And they're always very coy. I can't remember the name of the guy who chairs it.
I think it's Brandon Lewis, isn't it?
Yes. There you go. Yeah. He's always very coy about how many he's received, because it's meant to be completely blind. But apparently he's started receiving them, and he started receiving them at the end of last week, actually.
But I mean, you know, equally, this is kind of my point about this always being a factor in. I don't think it is Brandon Lewis, actually, having googled that in the background.
Or is it not?
But there's always people who are saying, like, you know, that are ready to submit their letters to the 1922 committee. I'm sure there's people that are pretty angry about it and have Graham Brady is the name of the guy.
Graham Brady.
There are always people who are willing to do that. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Graham Brady does actually have some letters at the moment. But, I mean, 55 is quite a lot.
Big number.
Actually, it's a reasonable number to have to climb over. And those people not only have to decide that they don't like Boris Johnson, they have to decide that ultimately they have to decide that they can replace him with somebody better, and that the squabble that will occur in public over the new leader will be less damaging to the party than Boris Johnson keeping going.
Why would you keep Boris Johnson around?
Well, I mean, the original reason that he was selected is because he was correctly perceived as being, you know, popular enough with the general public to be able to beat Jeremy Corbyn in a general election. And that the circumstances have changed massively since then. I mean, Boris Johnson is much less popular. Keir Starmer is a lot more respected than Jeremy Corbyn. I can see why there's a lot of local factors that make you think, yes, you know, the odds are shifting in favour of Johnson being ousted. But I just think the general tendency is that prime ministers do fight, you know, the next election. So I still ultimately think that it is more likely he will than not. But there's still, you know, there's a significant chance that he could get ousted.
No, I think they're going to boot him out.
You think they're going to boot him out? That's your big prediction.
I think they're going to boot him out, and I think it's going to be Gove who stabs him in the back. I think Gove is coordinating behind the scenes at the moment.
Yeah? Have you got insider information that you're
waiting? His complete silence.
But aren't there other people that are not saying very much at the moment? Like other cabinet ministers who haven't
Sunak
been quoted?
Isn't really saying very much. Priti Patel is busy trying to take away people's citizenship. Which passed, by the way, which is horrific.
So you're referring to the fact that the British government will now find it easier to strip people of citizenship if they qualify for citizenship of another country.
Mm-hmm. So basically, they Shamim and Begum you.
Yeah. So, that does seem bad.
And they don't have to tell you that they've done it.
They don't even have to tell you they've revoked your citizenship.
Nope.
That's astonishing. Yeah.
That shit is evil. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it, and I find it so intolerable that we've got at least another 2 years of this.
I mean, probably
two and a half years.
If Boris Johnson is,
I'll find the T-Rex. Hold on.
If Boris Johnson loses, you know, stops being prime minister, and they replace him with somebody else, the Tories might find it better to call an early election rather than a late one.
Really?
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. I mean, they say prime ministers get a honeymoon period, don't they? One. I mean, you're like,
yeah,
you're...
and when's that honeymoon period going to start, Jimmy?
I think he had a brief honeymoon period until the pandemic hit, to be fair.
Which was post-election was what, like 3 months?
3 or 4 months. Like yeah. Mm-hmm.
We should probably talk about the flat because we did tease it. I think it is the least interesting of the stories that we've done.
Whatever.
Today.
Ever. This is the most boring story we've ever covered.
Well, it's very technical, and I certainly think on its own it wouldn't be cutting through nearly as well, because you can just do the thing of, well, Boris Johnson paid him back. But it is, again, a representation of Boris Johnson's Conservatives not really caring about standards and rules and the way that you're meant to do things, that probably would bring down other people in similar positions.
So this is the flat refurbishment scandal you referred to earlier.
Yes.
So prime ministers get an allowance of, is it 30 grand a year, or is it 30 grand for their time in office to refurbish?
I don't know why you're bloody asking me. I
was hoping you would know.
Just off the top of my head, let me get the parliamentary standards booklet out.
I mean, 30 grand should be enough, I would say.
I think that is a sufficient amount of money to go to John Lewis, maybe.
Maybe. So there was this huge kerfuffle when the Johnsons refurbished. I think they're staying in the 11 Downing Street flat because it's bigger than 10 Downing Street, which I think has been the norm for prime ministers, actually, for... possible. I don't know. Yeah, anyway, I think Tony Blair started doing it, and I think the Johnsons have done it, but they ended up spending loads and like radically altering it from the, as you say, John Lewis nightmare that Theresa May had set up, and then it sort of there were questions over where the extra money had come from, and Boris Johnson for a long time denied that there was any underhandness about it, but we now know that he was paid by, what's this guy's name again? Lord something.
Lord up my own arse. Brownlow. Who looks just like what you'd expect Lord Brownlow to look like. Jowls.
I mean, you know, when you get to a certain age, Jazza, you may have jowls as well. So
shoot me.
Don't be too quick to criticise. But I mean, yeah, as you say, this story might have sunk without a trace because Boris Johnson has now paid back the money which he solicited from Lord Brownlow in the first place, and then didn't declare what was going on in a transparent way. But all that said, do you think the average person really cares if you know the Prime Minister has borrowed/taken some money from somebody to refurbish the Downing Street flat? All of our listeners have now just checked their phones to see if the podcast like, still playing.
Yeah. This is why I think it's a difficult story to cover, because it's the complexity of the fact that he first of all used taxpayers' money to pay for it. Then the Conservative Party paid Cabinet Office back.
Yep.
Then Lord Brownlee paid the Conservative Party, which is the bit that it was undeclared.
Right.
And that apparently Boris Johnson didn't know anything about, which he actually did. And that's the bit where there's iffiness. And then that Boris Johnson pays Lord Brownlee back a meagre £112,000. Oh my God, am I bloody middle-aged now? Processes matter.
Radical centrist.
There he is again. No longer a Navarra media radical. There's a reason that all of these processes are in place, because otherwise it's so easy for people to be able to. I mean, not that we're all of our noses are clean, but it's so easy to have corruption take root, and we already know that there is corruption in many parts of the not just the Conservative Party, but throughout politics in the UK. But we're one of the better countries in the world, and it's because of the processes that we have, and you need to fucking follow them, because otherwise... Oh, I hate slippery slope arguments. Otherwise, it's a slippery slope.
I mean, I guess the allegation in this story in particular is that Boris Johnson might have been inclined to give Lord Brownlow some favours in kind for the donation had he not paid the money back.
Oh, what do you reckon? Cheeky hand job?
I mean, you know, I don't know what Lord Brownlow's into. I don't want to make any suggestions.
No, yeah, of course.
But, you know, that
would be rude.
That would be the perception, wouldn't it?
I mean, he's a conservative. He's a life peer and a Conservative Party donor. Colour me surprised.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's been a pretty brazenly corrupt government, by British standards. And I suppose the other interesting thing is that someone like David Cameron, who was, you know, just as posh as Boris Johnson, took great care not to appear posh and not to appear rich. Boris Johnson
once
just doesn't care.
Rode on a sled with a husky.
Well, I mean, I sort of suspect that he wouldn't have gone in for a 100 grand refurbishment of the Downing Street flats. He'd have preferred to keep within the lines just to not attract negative attention to that side of his personality.
He'd have shopped at M&S rather than John Lewis.
Other shops are available.
No, none of them. They've all closed, mate. Debenhams, dead.
But yeah, it is pretty bad. I mean, it's something that would that actually Geoffrey Cox said. So this is the backbench MP who also, I mean, I say backbench MP, he only does that in his spare time. He's mostly a lawyer who works out of the Caribbean.
Jimmy, that was really funny. I really enjoyed that.
But he made the argument, and bear in mind, he's in a very safe seat, so this argument is bollocks, but I'm gonna say it anyway, that his constituents ultimately decide whether he's behaved appropriately because they can vote him out of office. Now, I think if you're in a very safe seat, and this goes for Labour or the Tories or anyone else, actually.
You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, that accountability mechanism just doesn't work. It just doesn't make any sense. And I guess we... You know, in democratic politics, that is often the argument that's made. But I think that Boris Johnson's premiership has been a walking advertisement for having an independent standards commissioner who essentially can sack people from democratic roles such as being a government minister or even the prime minister, maybe, without any recourse to voters. So, but that won't happen, will it?
How are you going to distract yourself from this shit show over the weekend?
I think there's a showing that I too am a man of the people, Jazza. I think there's a Christmas market at my local craft beer place that I will be going down to.
Oh, that's nice. That's sweet.
Yeah, I think so. What have you got planned?
I'm going to try and complete Nier Automata.
Complete what, sorry?
It's a video game, Grandad.
Nier Automata?
Yeah.
I've not heard of it. What sort of video game is that?
It's a first-person action shooter/slasher. RPG from Square Enix.
That sounds exhausting.
It's a really fantastic game. Some of the most dynamic gameplay I've ever played in a single game. So there you go.
That was a top review from Jazza there.
You're welcome.
I've nearly completed Metroid Dread, which is I don't know what you'd... It's like second-person shooter. It's like side-to-side slash
it's
adventure game.
It's a Metroid game.
It is. It's an old-school Metroid game with fancy graphics. And that is also very good. But before this turns into a proper gaming podcast, I think we should wrap it up. Jazza, where can they find you on the internet?
Jazza John on all social media platforms. And that's how I feel about all of them at the moment.
We haven't even discussed Jack Dorsey's resignation from Twitter.
I don't care.
Okay, we've discussed it now. You can find me at JDE Nichols on Twitter. And you can go to our Patreon account as well if this content has been worth your valuable pounds. And if it hasn't, just carry on doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, you're doing great.
Bye-bye, Jazza.
Bye-bye. Toodaloo.